Since the beginning of the Trump administration a little more than 2 years ago, the number of new regulations aimed at the trucking industry has slowed. However, 2018 was still marked with some major regulatory changes, including the electronic logging device requirement and changes to personal conveyance rules. So what's on tap in the way of new trucking regulations and laws for 2019, and how will they affect fleets and drivers? Welcome to another edition of Eyes on the Road, presented by PrePass, the provider of waystation bypass and toll payment services. PrePass also provides informed visualization software for improving safety scores and lowering toll-related costs. I'm Evan Lockridge. Soon after the Trump administration moved into the White House in January 2017, the president issued an executive order requiring all federal agencies to examine their regulations for possible removal or revisions. While that's happened at the U.S. Transportation Department, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, as well as other department and agencies within the federal government, it's also had another effect, and that has been the introduction of fewer new regulations, drawing both cheers from supporters and jeers from opponents of Donald Trump. But this doesn't mean new trucking regulations won't happen in 2019. There could actually be even more new and updated trucking regulations and legislation introduced this year compared to 2018. Joining me by phone to discuss the regulatory and legislative environment for trucking in 2019 is David Heller, as we begin the first part of a two-part series on the topic. David is the Vice President of Government Affairs with the Truckload Carriers Association. He's been with the organization for more than 13 years, but his experience in trucking goes back at least two decades. David, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan. I appreciate it. The opportunities like this are always fun to do, so I appreciate you having me.
Recently, you've been making presentations to various trucking groups about the legislative and regulatory environment for trucking. Can you give us an overview of what you expect this year and what's driving trucking regulatory policy in 2019?
Of course, and it's interesting when you look at the administration in place. The longstanding theory is that rules and regulations will get easier and less cumbersome, but that just doesn't seem to be the case. As we get into 2019, we're looking at one of the bigger years that we've ever had in trucking. Obviously, the grandfather clause on ELDs is going to roll out in December. We're looking at what could amount to massive changes to the hours of service regulations. The federal preemption issue has still not been put to bed, if you will. And then we're looking at CSA changes and inevitably an infrastructure discussion that's bound to happen some point this year. So the trucking industry is going to be chock full of discussion for the better part of the entire year in terms of what I'm predicting and what I'm seeing.
When I first contacted you about being on this podcast, we were chatting, you said one thing that was driving trucking regulatory policy in 2019 is what you said in three words: data, data, data. Could you explain a little bit about this?
Well, certainly. And this is kind of a new and exciting world of trucking, if you will, because with the explosion of ELDs onto our marketplace, it has generated massive amounts of data to the point where I don't even think we as an industry were prepared for what we were going to see. When you see data points that are reflective of detention time, personal conveyance, and telling the true picture of what drivers are going through almost on a daily basis, it is painting a more accurate story than what we've ever told before. Good news for the industry is that data is backing up what we've always anecdotally said. We need sleeper berth flexibility to better accommodate our drivers on the road who are dealing with things like detention time congestion, weather-related issues, dealing with fatigue driving. So these datas are pointing out to those finer things. Even truck parking has become an issue, if you will. A lot of these devices are pointing out, for instance, where a driver may be parking and how far from the road they may be parking. So it can highlight massive amounts of data in describing what the industry is looking like today. You've heard of that movie Moneyball. It's kind of that same basic principle. Statistical analysis now in trucking has become such a important part of the daily lives of this industry because it's now available to us with these devices. Incorporating that with cameras, you can now highlight, you know, unsafe driving practices and improving them and doing some remedial training for drivers. It's all over the board, but it's basically doing a lot of things to improve how our industry works. And I think we're going to see more in that. Somebody had explained to me, if you incorporate data that is generated by ELDs into like a 9-inning baseball game, we're probably at about the third inning of what we're actually seeing right now. So there's a lot more to come on this, and there's a lot more that are going to be generated by these devices so that it can totally improve how our drivers are living their daily lives and what they're encountering on the roadways, what they're encountering at the shippers and receivers facilities. It's just becoming a whole new way of in which we can logistically plan for trucking and truck driving events, if you will.
You mentioned sleeper berths and hours of service, and this got me thinking about how last year the FMCSA killed a study that could have changed hours of service rules for drivers, giving them more flexibility to split their sleeper berth time. Now, despite FMCSA killing this, I understand the issue of split sleeper berth time seems far from dead. What's going on, and what do you believe may happen with FMCSA regarding this issue?
There's been a lot of news on the killing of that study, for per se, if you will. And let's not view that as a negative thing. For instance, the study had been delayed for years already at this point. I think it was probably about two to three years long overdue to take place, and it still hadn't cleared OMB, and they couldn't get the budgetary dollars to get it done. That being said, even if they had that, you were looking at least a year long at a minimum in terms of statistical or data collection, and then on top of that, analysis, and then feeding that into a possible rulemaking. It was just totally cumbersome, and basically, with the advent of ELDs out there, probably unneeded. A lot of uproar had been made over the fact that they canceled the study, but let's look at the harsh reality. Is the agency moved forward with an advanced notice of proposed rulemaking for which flexibility in the sleeper berth was incorporated into that advanced notice. If you look at the regulatory timeline, an advanced notice is much like the regulatory process is a lot like throwing darts at a dartboard. When they issue an advanced notice, I may throw a dart and it hits the wall. The next step would be a notice of proposed rulemaking, which you can equate to the dart actually hitting the dartboard. And then a final rule would be the bullseye. And in saying that, traditionally speaking, that regulatory process would take about 5 years long, and that's provided there were no hiccups. At this point in time, the agency has been tasked with fast-tracking this rulemaking. If it makes sense to make a positive change to the hours of service rules, they're going to do it in a fast-track manner, which any study on hours of service, such as that pilot program that had originally been prescribed, would have delayed that. So in saying that, we're now looking at a change with the advance notice and the comments that were collected within that advance notice. And as I understand it, they do support moving forward with a notice of proposed rulemaking. We'll have that next step in place sometime soon. And by sometime soon, I would bet within the next month or two, we'll probably have a notice of proposed rulemaking to better reflect so that they can gather more information on that sleeper berth flexibility issue. So it would be a wholesale change to the hours of service in which we operate today.
All right, I want to move from the regulatory side to the legislative side. 2 years ago, Republicans held both houses of Congress and, of course, had just gotten the presidency. Now the Democrats are in control of the House. Does this change the legislative environment that much for trucking in 2019?
It does. It certainly has that effect on it, and it changes both fronts, legislative and regulatory, because even if the agency takes part in something, the Democrats will inevitably chime in. As we roll into, which is appearing to be late spring, probably early summer, discussions on infrastructure, and that's a conversation that this country desperately needs to have, you'll have a bipartisan effort that it would seemingly be bipartisan. However, with basically two opposites not totally getting along, I don't know how far it's actually going to go. Will it hinder the conversation? Will it be something that everybody can seemingly rally around? What outside influences will come into play, i.e. immigration? And where do we go from here? They wanted to get this done after the presidential election 2 years ago, and yet here we are still waiting for a spending bill on infrastructure that can make the Highway Trust Fund more sustainable. At that point in time, where is that going to go, and who's going to have the most important discussions on how to pay for it, which will be the discussion that drives this bill. The last bill that came out, the FAST Act, had no pay-fors in it whatsoever. It was strictly regulatory process that were involved, things like drug testing and what have you. This bill is widely expected to address the shortfalls of the Highway Trust Fund and the pay force if they can come to some consensus on it. And that's the big if. If both sides can get along, meaning the House Democrats, Senate Republicans, what have you, if they can get along, come up with a bill that absolutely makes sense, then that's the way to go. But it remains to be seen whether they can actually get it done.
You touched on the next topic I wanted to ask you about, and that is infrastructure spending, including highway funding. Now, as you mentioned, there has been a lot of talk in recent years about significantly increasing infrastructure funding, but nothing's come from Congress. Do you think we finally have a chance of seeing Congress really increasing highway funding? And what are the chances it could lead to higher fuel taxes, which, by the way, haven't been raised in 25 years?
Well, to start off, the fuel tax is the most logical and efficient way to address the shortfalls in the Highway Trust Fund. The infrastructure will address that, but the biggest issue is, and what's being talked about right now, is exactly how much and where does it go from here? And there have been many talks that, you know, tolling, public-private partnerships, vehicle miles traveled tax, but inevitably it all goes back to that fuel tax. And this is the tax you pay directly at the pump. So whether you're putting fuel into your car, diesel into your truck, all of these go into play, and it's all paid directly at the pump. That being said, what's the earmark? What kind of dollars are we looking at? Well, roughly we're looking a 20 to 25 cent increase per gallon in what you're paying at the pump. They're saying estimates put average American somewhere in the $300 range of what they would pay annually. However, there have been studies that showed if infrastructure spending isn't done, they'll pay actually an additional $900 in vehicle maintenance due to the crumbling roads and infrastructure. So the wise investment is actually paying more at the pump because the quote-unquote infrastructure to pay it out is already in place. The administrative fees are already in place. And quite frankly, the vehicle to push that out to the projects that need to get done are there. However, many people are going to say, what about fuel efficiency, because that has certainly crept in to our cars and trucks all across the nation. And you have cars and trucks that are traveling farther with less fuel, which means they're going to the pump less, but they're putting the same miles on our roadways. Where does that creep in? And that's got to be part of the conversation. How do they account for that? Which some people are saying some of that infrastructure issue and the VMT may creep into play with that. And there's several pilots out there right now that are testing this vehicle miles travel tax for this very reason. It's, you know, just because you have a fuel efficient car doesn't mean you stop using our roadways. You're still using the roadways and you're still putting miles on the roadways. You're just paying less at the pump. So why are they getting a free pass becomes that biggest question mark out there. So with the same miles, a mile equal a mile, regardless of what kind of vehicle you're traveling, you're still putting the wear and tear on that and somebody's got to pay for it. So the pay for it are going to be this massive talk on what's going on. I know Chairman Schuster, before he left TNI in the last Congress, had put forth a plan that advocated for a, I believe it was 20 to 25 cent increase for the next 3 years and then indexed it to inflation for the following 7 years. After a total of 10 years, they sunset the fuel tax and then throw a vehicle miles travel tax in there to better equate for the vehicle miles that our citizens, our trucking companies, anybody that uses our roadways are traveling on a daily basis. That was the first real sensible talk we had, and Chairman Schuster put it out there before he left Congress. Now you have a new chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure, Chairman DeFazio, that has come in, and he's obviously openly discussed this issue. He's from Oregon, who's in the process of having a pilot program in place to test VMT. So it would be safe to say he's probably a fan of this type of program. So in saying that, where is this going to shake out? How is it going to pay for? What is the Trump administration eventually going to settle down for? And that becomes the bigger question mark. And that's the heart of the discussion. That's going to be the hiccup or the blessing for this infrastructure bill and whether or not they can get it done.
That's David Heller, Vice President of Government Affairs with the Truckload Carriers Association. I will continue my conversation with him about the regulatory and legislative environment for trucking in 2019 in the next episode of Eyes on the Road. We'll discuss what changes are expected in the FMCSA's Compliance, Safety, and Accountability Program, known as CSA for short, as well as drug testing for truckers, safety, and more. Look for that podcast around the end of January. In the meantime, you can get more information about upcoming changes to trucking regulations. Just log on to the PrePass website and check out our blog for the latest articles, as well as the resource library. That's at prepass.com, PrePass.com. By the way, you can keep up with PrePass online by logging on to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can hear previous editions of this podcast or subscribe to it either on the PrePass website or through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Android, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and more. You've been listening to Eyes on the Road, presented by PrePass, the provider of waystation bypass and toll payment services. PrePass also provides informed visualization software for improving safety scores and lowering toll-related costs. I'm Evan Lockridge. Thank you for listening, and remember to keep your eyes on the road.